basically what I've come to realize is that as we have trained our AI platforms to grow and to learn and to be able to answer stuff, we've trained it with material in how humans do things. Mm. And all too often humans don't want to appear wrong. And so I've noticed that AI actually follows that exact model. They
That's
don't
so
want
interesting.
It is. But, and so finding methods of working with AI to help prevent it from doing that, a lot of people call it hallucination.
Welcome to Inside CTOX Podcast. I'm Donna, Head of Membership and Partnership, and today we're stepping inside the minds of some of the most innovative tech leaders out there. This isn't just a podcast. It's a place where CTO journeys come alive, where stories of struggles, breakthroughs, and growths unfold. We're here to unpack the experiences of real CTOs navigating through our CTOX Accelerator and membership program. So sit back, tune in, let's get into the story. Welcome to another episode of Inside CTOX. Today, we have John Fitzpatrick. From founding Matang, a boutique master data management shop, and growing it to 25 developers with 6 million in revenue in under 3 years, wow, to architecting the state of Indiana's COVID contact tracing app, where he ensured application success while maintaining personal privacy rights. John Fitzpatrick has made a career out of engineering clarity in chaos and backing it up with results. In CTOX, he signed his first client within 4 weeks. John lives in Arizona with his wife and 4 kids, a former naval officer turned entrepreneur. He's now thriving in the fractional CTO lifestyle, blending freedom, leadership, and family, all on his own terms. Welcome, John.
Hi, Don. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Delighted. Thanks. Thanks for joining. So you joined CTOX way back at the start of the summer. Talk us through the reasons why you wanted to go fractional and join CTOX.
So I've basically been doing fractional work since 2017, except for the time where I founded Matang, but most of our projects were the equivalent of doing a fractional type work role. Mm-hmm. I've been working from home since late 2016. Love it. The freedom of it has been great. But just over the 8 years since I started doing that, a lot has changed in the market. My focus has changed. My abilities and capabilities have grown significantly. And earlier in late spring, mid-spring or so, April, there was an event that I went to, and I got the idea from that event to kind of create a new service offering. Now, I've been trying to find a new job for a bit. The market has been pretty bad. I had a really, like, this it just sounded like such an exciting opportunity for me. It's like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And the main product I was going to offer was fractional chief technology officer. I had somebody else tell me before that, I did a really good job as a CTO. Like, I was the CEO of a company, but I was also doing a lot of the CTO work. And the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, the CTO job sounds actually better than the CEO job for me. It more aligns with all the stuff I like to do and the stuff I do for fun and stuff. And I don't have as much requirements of how to run the business. Anyway, I put together a business plan, really liked how it was going. But I wasn't sure on how to attract my clients, how to land my clients, how to do things that way. And I saw an ad on Instagram for CTOX, and basically every single bullet point of that aligned perfectly with my business plan. And like, I think they're talking to me.
It's a sign. It's a sign.
Yeah. So I took a look at it, and it just sounded like a really good platform. It sounded like a great way to help me figure out the best ways to land clients. And that was really the main driver for me. It's like, do a really good job with managing lots of projects, working with different clients, working as though I'm an internal person at my customers or my clients' organizations. The hardest part for me has been the sales, because that's really not my strongest suit. But anyway, that, like coming in and seeing the CTOX platform, it's really helped me pull things together and kind of change my focus, my perceptions on how to do that. So it's been a good thing for me.
Yeah. So for a guy who thinks he's not good at sales, closing a client in 4 weeks, wow, that's that's pretty impressive. So Fractional, like, isn't just freelance with a fancier title. Like, what's the, in your opinion, what's the invisible skill that no one tells you about that you need to survive being Fractional?
So I've never really looked at the work that I've been doing as I'm an external person outside the company. I come in and one of the biggest goals I have is success for the organization that I'm working for. I always act as though I'm an internal person. I meet people there. I am looking for success for the overall organization and try to build that. That's one of the things that really attracted me to just the whole the Fractional CTO model. And the more that I learned about it after signing up for CTOX, I was like, this is great. You know, it's helped set the expectation for people as well. On, hey, we can't necessarily afford a high-end CTO at full pay for annual salary. Mm. And you don't actually need to have a CTO that is there for 40 plus hours a week or something like that. You can get that job done because it's the knowledge. It's not necessarily the CTO doing the work. If your CTO is doing all the work, that's the wrong person for that. You want to get developers. You want to kind of grow that and get cheaper people to do that. Mm-hmm. And as much as I like doing the work, I also like doing lots of different things. And that's one of the things that just has been really attractive about this lifestyle and this model of work has been I get to come in, take ownership for a project, take ownership for an idea and pushing it through to success. But I don't need to necessarily be the one who's doing the work, and my customers get kind of the best of both worlds. They have someone that can ensure project success, can do the stuff when needed, but is also happy to hand that off and get cheaper people to do it. So.
What was exactly that? Thinking about through the accelerator, what was the moment that you were like, oh, this is really hard? Like, I was expecting it to be hard, but this is really, really hard.
I don't think anything has been like, it's really, really hard. It's been more of just, do I really want to do that? one of the biggest parts there is it's kind of like cold calling. It's the just reaching out to people who you don't know, who never talked with before. That's one of the things that I've been a little resistant for. But I have just recently launched my LinkedIn campaign and upgraded my LinkedIn profile and have started posting on a daily basis. And what has really helped me in doing that is a lot of the material that's something. So back at Matang, I actually had about 5 people assigned to marketing there, and it took us a month, and they helped design and build an entire campaign model of how we were trying to sell things, what posts we were doing each day, and so it was pretty expensive. Going through a lot of the material that CTOX has, it points to a similar type of campaign structure. The thought of how to do that myself has been, and that's in the attract phase. That's really one of the hardest parts is you got to do that. You got to do it daily. You got to keep it
moving. That's right.
That's been one of the harder things for me. So in the way that I like to do things, it's find a way to solve a problem, of make that easier. So over the last weeks, I've actually built and used AI to help build an app to manage that campaign for me. So that's been kind of fun. But it's been taking all the material that CTOX has taught me and incorporating that in building this, I think, has been instrumental in making it work well for me.
Mm. Now you've scaled companies from one to, what was it, 20, 25? Like, how does it feel, or what's the difference between having that big team of people and being a solo fractional CTO? Like, what's the pros and cons of that?
What's the pros and cons? I enjoyed working with people a lot. I enjoyed having a team to do things. At the same time, there was always frustrations of, like, I have an idea and getting other people to see the same vision and to complete that idea. There are times that I didn't do the best of job at sharing the vision, I guess, or others didn't necessarily do the best job at seeing the vision or implementing the vision. I have a way of working that works well for some, doesn't work well for others, but I like speed. I like going fast and trying to get things done. But I also am very cognizant in technical debt, and I try very hard to avoid doing things that would be lining up or causing problems in the future with either data structures. And that's one of the things that I find so many applications have, is that they did not take the time at the beginning to design their data scheme correctly to handle what they actually want to do in the future. And for quite a while, I was actually doing kind of database, not DBA type work, but more of come in and solve the problems in a database. Mm-hmm. So that, like, there was one client one time that had, they were running their application on Azure SQL Server, so the SQL database on the Microsoft Azure platform. They were at the top tier, and they were having problems where every time, about 40 to 50 people using their app and searching for things would tend to cause a bottleneck that just slowed it down. They were spending close to $20,000+ a month on just having this database running.
Wow.
And it was crazy. And I went in and looked at it. It took me 5 lines to write a script that basically just created a full text index on a couple things, but found the right place. It had over a 7 million percent reduction in the cost of just how it ran. The entire app, the performance on it went way better. I was able to drop them to the fourth tier level. So before they were like the 16th tier level or whatever it is that was at the top at that time. But they were basically just a couple steps above the free tier. And they were able to drop the entire thing. And so that's the type of stuff that I like to do.
Yeah. That's good. When people ask, oh, why should I have a CTO? Why do I need somebody with all this experience and knowledge? That's the story. that's exactly the story to say.
Major cost savings like that day.
Yeah. Yeah, it always amazes me when people are like, oh, I don't think I need that, or I don't think, and I'm like, it's hard to put a price on having that, being able to make that decision, have that knowledge in that exact moment in time. And I think that's the great thing for that fractional CTOs can do with a number of clients. So tell me this, you come out of the Navy and your first thought was not to go into corporate America. Right. What was the reason that you were like, no, I'm not doing this corporate ladder nonsense. I'm going starting my own company.
I guess I've always had that dream of being self-sufficient, not having a boss, of being able to make my own decisions and not necessarily have to do what other people are directing me to do. Mm-hmm. The first company that I started wasn't really in a tech space. It was more in graphic arts and design, but it was a surf clothing company that my brother had this great idea. It's like, okay, that's a cool idea. You be the artist, you do sales. I'll take care of all the technical stuff. So set up a production process, had a warehouse, and had bought the equipment for it and stuff. And that was all self-funded. Typically, but didn't really want to rely on others, didn't want to take a loan out or anything like that. So saved up the money in the military and got out and had everything set up. But that was late 2010, early 2011. And the economy was just so horrible there. We couldn't get any, we couldn't get any customers. So
it was, that's a tough time. That's a tough time to particularly for something like that.
Yeah. So we had no sales and, got some cool equipment so I can make some cool stuff now. But
if you want to restart that company, you got everything you need, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I'm not going to do that again. That was
lesson learned.
Lessons learned. It was a fun time, but, also learned a lot about just what it takes to run a company, how to set one up, the different business structures, how to handle finances, how to handle accounting, how to take care of your hiring, whatever. There's a lot that I learned from that, that it was, okay, maybe I wasn't ready, but okay, let's try it again. After that, I ended up joining a solar manufacturing company, and that's what moved us down here to Arizona. And that's really where I ended up cutting my teeth in the world of data. Before that, I'd done a bunch of stuff with MySQL and different website structures and PHP and running a LAMP server for many years and having fun with web design and stuff. That was fun, but coming down here to this company, that's really where I got started with my data journey. It made sense to me. I can see patterns very well. I can, data analytics was a very strong area for me.
So we talk me through the journey of kind of starting that own business, then leading a team. Like, how has your leadership style changed from when you've had that first company, maybe your first employee, to where you are now?
I don't know if my style has changed. I think I'm pretty similar to how I've been. I've grown and stuff. Maybe I listen more. I mean, I'm more stubborn. I don't know. I don't think my style has changed too much.
No.
Not sure what else.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, like, you know, you kind of learn, you probably kind of learned a lot of that earlier in your life, more than like a lot of people don't learn to become a leader until they're quite far into their career. Whether, I guess, being an officer in the Navy, you kind of maybe learned that a little bit earlier than most.
I basically went to one of the biggest schools in the world for leadership. I went to the United States Naval Academy. The whole thing from that school was leadership. That's it.
So with CTOX, community is a really big pillar, and it's something that we take very, very seriously. What's your experience of the community here within CTOX?
Love it. Like the group of people that are here is, you learn some information. That's great. You learn some processes and how to do stuff. But having this group of people to bounce ideas off of, to show things to get answers from, it's like, hey, what do you think about this? Or the peer group that we have is amazing. Not sure it's helping me land new clients, but it's definitely helping to focus ideas. And it's also fun to kind of give and help others that are part of this community, take a look at what they're doing and to provide feedback. That's been a huge blessing and something that I wasn't expecting in the sign-up process, but great part of the project or great part of the program.
Yeah, everybody loves the peer progress. Not so much, you know, doing the push-ups or doing the singing, but it keeps everybody a kind of all. So 12 months from now, if you had to measure success, not in revenue, not in number of LinkedIn followers or connections, but how would you know you're winning?
I know I'd be winning because my wife would quit her job and we could go back to enjoying a little more freedom from the thought of needing more. That's really where, for me, it's that. That's just, I'm winning if I get there. That's great. Where I'd like to be would be those things, but also feeling like I'm doing something worthwhile. One of the things that was very important to us at Matong as we built that company was kind of the culture and the values that we had. Mm. And one of our core values there was leave a good legacy. And that's how I try to embody that value. And it's so that whenever I'm called home, whatever is left behind, that it leaves a good legacy with my kids, with people that I've worked with, the people that have known me, or stuff, and actually see that, hey, you know, the world is better for having had me in it. Mm. And I think that if everyone has that view, this would be a better place. So that's how I try to live.
That's great.
If I get the opportunity from that, if this helps me have that opportunity, then wonderful. And when you're doing, when you're successful in your projects, when you get to work with a lot of different people, it's much easier to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so lovely. That's so great. And in the future, if one of your four kids was to say, hey, Daddy, I want to be the next great fractional CTO, what would you say to them? Would you err them on the side of caution, or would you fully be enthusiastic about that?
I'd be fully enthusiastic about it. I've been trying to get them into doing data for a long time. One thing that for me, data is a foundational aspect in pretty much everything. And there's just so many aspects that go into it. I started talking a little bit about, I found that analytics worked very, very well for me. But the reason I was good at analytics is because I started just foundationally understanding how to structure data right. And that it, you know, just that project there really brought me to understanding, you know, how to build a data foundation the right way in order to just minimize the errors, minimize the confusion, maximize the use and the value of it. And you know, that was one of the whole reasons I built Matong in the first place was to focus on solving the problem of master data for everybody. You know, for those who aren't familiar with the term of master data, it's basically if you have more than one system in your organization, say that you have your sales team is working in Salesforce and you have your logistics team is working in SAP, there we go, or some other ERP solution or some other type of organization. Large platform. When you have those programs, whenever there is an update to a client's record or a personnel record or a product or something like that, if the address changes, phone number changes, how do you ensure that goes across your system? You know, how do you ensure that, you know, Bob Smith in one system, you know, might be in Florida, you might have a Bobby Smith in New York, and you might have a Robert Smith. Washington.
Yeah, absolutely.
In person or not? You know, what if they've have the same phone number, the same email address? Is it the same person? What if they're across different systems? You know, that type of discrepancy causes all kinds of problems in operations for an organization. It causes problems in your analysis of how things go. I remember when I was working at the Power One, then ABB, on-time delivery was a huge thing. It's like, which customers are you doing good at? Well, we had so many different data systems there. Answering that question was impossible in just one system. And one of the things I realized there in walking around was, and talking to people in different departments, it's like, okay, where does our data exist? And the sales guys would say Salesforce. The manufacturing guys would say we had actually like three or four different platforms that were being used on the manufacturing floor. We had SAP, we had Oracle, we had some home-built things, and all of them had important data. We could not measure on-time delivery, or we could not measure the success. Like the question of who's our best customer, who's our best sales guy, you can't answer that from just one system. And so it was building ways and understanding that our data structure encompasses all of this. Like our company data is not just a single data source. It's all of the data sources, including data sources that are not even ours to manage in the first place. There's external data that is extremely useful in helping us. So starting to understand, you know, building data foundations. And basically, I created a bunch of methods and ways of doing this stuff before I had even understood or heard the term master data, or what reference data is, or what metadata management is, or data lineage.
You were just doing it out of necessity.
All these things, I didn't know what they were. I didn't know data governance at the time. And then it's like after starting Matang, I kind of stumbled upon this data governance world and started looking. I'm like, wait, there's already a whole group of people that understand this stuff. So I went to a conference one time called the Data Governance Information Quality Conference in San Diego. And they were offering the Certified Data Management Professional Exam, the CDMP. I was like, yeah, might as well take it. You know, it doesn't hurt to take a test. So went and took it. Didn't have the book, never read it, then anything like that. got a pretty good score. I was pretty happy with that. And since that time, I've taken other specialist exams and stuff. And so what I found is that just basically without knowing anything in the fund, like without getting external educational material in, I naturally grasped and naturally designed and built a lot of the whole data governance program myself. It's been kind of nice to review a lot of the other materials, and I'm currently a practitioner level, a certified data management professional. And I think that having that skill is going to really help me in this CTO world. It's something that CTOs need to understand. What goes into the data foundation for your organization? How do you ensure consistency between systems? You know, that's something that's extremely important. And so your question, and kind of a long-winded answer, but your question about what I feel about my kids doing that, that's great, but I want them to focus on the data first. And I say this for everybody. That's
true.
You cannot be successful with your technology platforms for your organization if you do not understand the data that your company has in the first place.
Yeah.
And if you get in and don't understand that, you won't achieve the successes that you could.
And it goes across every industry. This isn't like just people sort of think about these things for like just SaaS platforms and stuff like that. This goes, you know, whether you're, you know, leading a franchise of hairdressers or running a restaurant or hospitality or, you know, any of the things that are traditionally non-tech, data is such an important part of our lives now. So, you know, if you have those questions, that's why everybody needs a fractional CTO. Because that's the questions that you should be asking your fractional CTO.
I personally think that the single biggest risk that any business owner has or any company has is doing something wrong with their data. You know, the penalties these days, if you do something stupid with somebody's private information, you know, what happens if you hire a sales guy and he extracts all your customer's information into an Excel sheet and loads it into some platform where it's not protected, and he was stupid enough to put in, you know, credit card information in that. You were stupid enough to give him access to that in the first place.
Buck stops with you.
If you hadn't put in controls in place to prevent that, have fun in prison.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just fines. This is prison sentence type stuff on because of lack of treating data the way that it should be tracked. And so, it seems like most people have no idea what to do with data and aren't pushing it. And you have platforms like Microsoft or Salesforce or wherever that are like, hey, just use our stuff. You'll be good. Microsoft has built in a lot of things that do a pretty good job, but if you have not thought and have not put the processes in place in your organization on how to protect yourself, your risk is enormous. And so many people just stick their head in the sand and don't understand that.
Absolutely. And do you think that people have too much or put too much trust into, well, it's Google, well, it's Microsoft, I'm sure everything's fine?
Absolutely. Well, that's just trusting into a system like that is, it gives a false sense of security.
So don't trust everybody. Hire a fractional CTO. That's our message. It's so much more affordable, I think, than people think, because you can't afford not to. As you, to your point, the risk is going to be too high. You need to have a technology professional and somebody with like the likes of your expertise and knowledge to guide you to where it needs to be. All right, thank you, John. Now for my favorite part. Okay, don't scare. No, don't be scared. Don't be scared. Our final segment, we like to do something a bit special. I'm going to ask ChatGPT live, right here, right now, for a thought-provoking, timely question to ask John, our fractional CTO, and you got to answer it. Are you game?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to bring up my ChatGPT. Bear with me a second.
Maybe I should pull up Claude and have Claude answer.
No, you have to answer it. All right, let's go. Hello, ChatGPT. We love a bit of spontaneity, so we thought who better to challenge us than AI. What question would you like to ask fractional CTO John at this exact moment in time? Okay, it's thinking. All right. Oh, this is funny considering what we just said. Maybe it's listening to us. Okay, John.
Definitely.
ChatGPT would like to know if most startups don't need a CTO, just a decent dev lead and ChatGPT, are we all just selling prestige over practicality?
So ChatGPT or other AI agents do a pretty good job on a lot of things. You know, they've been trained on data governance. They've been trained on a lot of stuff. So it's a great tool that can be very helpful with this stuff. But as we were just talking about, you know, trusting one platform to cover your stuff. I remember when ChatGPT first came out, I was the CEO of Matong, but I said, I was testing things out. I was like, okay, who's the CEO of Matong? And it comes back with some name, not mine. It's like, that's interesting. Where did you get this information? Oh, I got it off the company's website, and I got it from LinkedIn and some articles. I said, okay, please give me the references to those. And so ChatGPT actually gave me references to, it gave me a LinkedIn profile link. It gave me, you know, the website link. It gave me a couple articles links. It quoted these sources. It said what was on them. Mm-hmm. None of them worked. It made all of that up.
Yeah.
And then it just doubled down on doing things the wrong way. But when I confronted it finally, I said, actually, I'm the CEO of Matong. Why did you just make these things up? It didn't give me an answer on the why. Because I've been working on projects, one of the things that I've had to put into them is a method or a feature in there that is testing for accuracy. So it's search the web, provide actual real references to things. Mm-hmm. Look them up, validate this. Don't just make up something. Help me with this. And it makes up some story about my past. It's like, no, that's not true. No idea where you got that from. It's making stuff up. And it still does that a lot. So.
Yeah, so don't replace your CTO needs with ChatGPT. That's what,
you can't do that. It's going to make stuff up. You could get a senior dev who will do a lot of things, but they don't necessarily have the right perspective yet on how to holistically bring together the tech stack for an entire organization. And it's more than just the tech stack. It's more than just running the technology. It's how do you actually get your company? How do you train your people? What processes do you put in place? What policies do you put in place? Understanding that is a key thing. And having a CTO or a senior data governance director or something like that that is responsible for those things is a key thing to getting that done. And a fractional CTO that understands those things and can create that is essential, really, to a small business or medium-sized business and getting that out there. But to me, that's a very important part.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You can't just use AI to take over there.
Not yet. John, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing your journey, sharing your insights with us today. Join us again next time on another edition of Inside CTOX. The stories, experiences, and advice you hear today are incredibly valuable, not just for CTOs, but for the broader tech community and leaders. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in to Inside CTOX. Don't forget to follow us on social media, tag us, and share your favorite insights from the episode. We love hearing your feedback. Make sure to subscribe and check in again for our next episode, where we'll continue to explore the stories behind the tech leaders shaping the future. Until next time.